43. The Ghost Bloods. And thus were the disturbances in the Rev Toparchy quieted, when upon their ceasing to prosecute their civil dissensions, Nalani Lin betook himself to finally accept the Skybreakers, who had named him their master, when initially he had spurned their advances, and in his own interests refused to countenance that which he deemed a pursuit of vanity and annoyance. This was the last of the heralds to admit to such patronage. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 5, page 17. The war camp was still busy, despite the hour. She wasn't surprised. Her time in Carbranth had taught her that not everyone treated the arrival of night as a reason to stop working. Here there were nearly as many people about in the streets as when she'd first ridden through, and almost nobody paid attention to her. For once, she didn't feel conspicuous. Even in Carbranth, people had glanced at her, noticed her, considered her. Some had thought of robbing her, others of how to use her. A young light eyes without proper escort was distinctive, and possibly an opportunity. However, while wearing straight dark hair and dark brown eyes, she might as well have been invisible. It was wonderful. Shallan smiled, stuffing her hands in the pockets of her coat. She still felt embarrassed by that gloved safe hand, though nobody even looked at it. She reached an intersection. In one direction, the war camp glittered with torches and oil lanterns. A market, busy enough that nobody trusted spheres in their lamps. Shallan walked toward it. She'd be safer on the more traveled streets. Her fingers crinkled on the paper in her pocket, and she drew it out as she stopped to wait for a group of chattering people to move from in front of her. The map looked easy enough to parse. She just needed to get her bearings. She waited, then finally realized that the group in front of her wasn't going to move. She was expecting them to defer to her as they would to a light eyes. Shaking her head at her foolishness, she went around them. It continued like that. She was forced to squeeze through tight places between bodies and was jostled as she walked. This market flowed like two rivers passing one another, with shops on either side and vendors peddling food in the center. It was even covered in some places by awnings that stretched across to the buildings on the other side. Perhaps only 10 paces across, it was a claustrophobic, bustling, jabbering mess. And Shallan loved it. She found herself wanting to stop and sketch half the people she passed. They all seemed so full of life, whether haggling or simply walking with a friend and chewing on a snack. Why hadn't she gone out more in Carbranth? She stopped, grinning at a man performing a show with puppets and a box. Farther down the way, a Herdazian used a spark flicker and some kind of oil to make bursts of flame in the air. If she could just stop off a little time and do a sketch of him? No. She had business to be about. Part of her didn't want to go forward with it, obviously, and her mind was trying to distract her. She was becoming increasingly aware of this defense of hers. She used it. She needed it. But she couldn't let it control her life. She did stop at the cart of a woman selling glazed fruit, however. They looked juicy and red, and had been stabbed through with a little stick before being dipped in a glassy melted sugar. Shallan pulled a sphere from her pocket and held it out. The woman froze, staring at the sphere. Others stopped nearby. What was the problem? It was just an emerald mark. It wasn't like she'd gotten out the brome. She looked at the glyphs listing prices. A stick of candied fruit was a single clear chip. Denominations of spheres wasn't something she often had to think about, but if she remembered, her mark was worth 250 times the cost of the treat. Even in her family's strained state, this wouldn't have been considered much money to them. But that was on the level of houses and estates, not the level of street vendors and working dark eyes.
Ah, I don't think I can change that, the woman said.
Citizen, a title given to a wealthy dark eyes of the first or second non. Shallan blushed. How many times was she going to prove just how naive she was?
It's for one of the treats and for some help.
I'm new to the area. I could use some directions.
Expensive way to get directions, miss,
the woman said, but pocketed the sphere with deft fingers nonetheless.
I need to find Gnar Street.
Ah, you're going the wrong storming way, miss. Back up the market flow. Turn right. You'll need to go, 6 blocks, I think? It's easy to find. The High Prince made everyone lay out their buildings in squares like in a proper city. Look for the taverns and you'll be there.
But, miss, I don't think that's the sort of place one like you should be visiting, if you don't mind me saying.
Even as a dark eyes, people thought her incapable of taking care of herself.
Thank you, Shallan said, plucking out one of the sticks of candied fruit.
She hastened away, crossing the flow to join those walking in the opposite direction through the market.
Pattern, she whispered.
Mmm. He was clinging to the outside of her coat, near the knees.
Trail behind and watch to see if anyone follows me, Shallan said. Do you think you can do that?
They will make a pattern if they come, he said, dropping to the ground.
For a brief moment in the air between coat and stone, he was a dark mass of twisting lines. Then he vanished, like a drop of water hitting a lake.
Shallan hurried along with the flow, safe hand securely gripping the sphere pouch in her coat pocket, free hand carrying the stick of fruit. She remembered all too well how Yasna's deliberate flashing of too much money in Karbranth had lured thieves like vines to storm water. Shallan followed the directions, her sense of liberation replaced by anxiety. The corner she took out of the market led her to a roadway that was much less crowded. Was the fruit vendor trying to direct Shallan into a trap, where she could be robbed easily? Head down, she hurried along the road. She couldn't soulcast to protect herself, not as Yasna had.
Storms.
Shallan hadn't even been able to make sticks catch fire. She doubted she'd be able to transform living bodies. She had light weaving, but she was already using that. Could she light weave a second image at the same time? How was her disguise doing anyway? It would be draining the light from her spheres. She almost pulled them out to see how much was gone, then stopped herself. Fool! She was worried about being robbed, and so she considered revealing a handful of money? She stopped after 2 blocks. Some people did walk this street, a handful of men in workers' clothing heading home for the night. The buildings here certainly weren't as nice as the ones she'd left behind.
Nobody follows,
Pattern said from her feet. Shallan jumped nearly to the rooftops. She raised her free hand to her breast, breathing in and out deeply. She really thought she could infiltrate a group of assassins. Her own spren often made her jump.
Tin said that nothing would teach me, Shallan thought, but personal experience.
I'm just going to have to muddle through these first few times and hope I get used to this before I get myself killed.
Let's keep moving, Shallan said.
We're running out of time.
She started forward, digging into the fruit.
It really was good, though her nerves prevented her from fully enjoying it. The street with the taverns was actually 5 blocks away, not 6. Shallan's increasingly wrinkled paper showed the meeting place as a tenement building across from a tavern, with blue light shining through the windows. Shallan tossed aside her fruit stick as she stepped up to the tenement building. It couldn't be old. Nothing in these war camps could be more than 5 or 6 years old, but it looked ancient. The stones weathered, the window shutters hanging askew in places. She was surprised a high storm hadn't blown the thing over. Fully aware that she could be striding into the Whitespine's den for dinner, she walked up and knocked. The door was opened by a dark-eyed man the size of a boulder who had a beard trimmed like a horn-eater's. His hair did seem to have some red in it. She resisted the urge to shuffle from one foot to the next as he looked her up and down.
Finally, he opened the door all the way, motioning her in with thick fingers. She didn't miss the large axe that leaned against the wall just next to him, illuminated by the single feeble stormlight lamp. It looked like it only had a chip in it, on the wall. Taking a deep breath, Shallan entered. The place smelled moldy. She heard water dripping from somewhere farther inside, storm water infallibly making its way from a leaking roof down, down, down to the ground floor. The guard did not speak as he led her along the hall. The floor was wood. There was something about walking on wood that made her feel as if she were going to fall through. It seemed to groan with every step. Good stone never did anything like that. The guard nodded toward an opening in the wall, and Shallan stared into the blackness there. Steps. Down.
Storms! What am I doing?
Not being timid. That was what she was doing. Shallan glanced at the brutish guard and raised an eyebrow, forcing her voice to sound calm. You really went all out on the decor. How long did you have to look to find a den in the shattered plains that had a creepy staircase in it? The guard actually smiled. It didn't make him look any less intimidating. The stairs aren't going to collapse under me, are they? Shallan asked.
It's fine, the guard said.
His voice was surprisingly high-pitched.
It did not collapse for me, and I had two breakfasts today.
He patted his stomach.
Go. They wait for you.
She got out a sphere for light and started down the stairwell. The stone walls here had been cut. Who would go to the trouble to burrow out a basement for a rotting tenement building? The answer came as she noticed several extended creme dribbles on the wall, a little like wax melting down the side of a candle. These had hardened to stone long ago. This hole was here before the Alethi came, she thought. When settling this war camp, Sabariel had built this building above an already existent basement. The war camp craters must have once held people. There was no other explanation. Who had they been? The Natan people of long ago? The steps led down into a small, empty room. How odd to find a basement in such a ramshackle building. Normally you found them only in wealthy homes, as the precautions one needed to take to prevent flooding were extensive. Shallan folded her arms, confused, until one corner of the floor opened, bathing the room in light. Shallan stepped back, breath catching. A part of the rock floor was false, hiding a trapdoor. The basement had a basement. She stepped up to the edge of the hole and saw a ladder heading down toward red carpet, and light that seemed almost blinding following the dimness she'd been in. This place must flood something fierce after a storm. She swung onto the ladder and made her way down, glad for the trousers. The trapdoor closed above. It appeared to have some sort of pulley mechanism. She hopped off onto the carpet and turned, finding a room that was incongruously palatial. A long dining table ran down the center, and it sparkled with glass goblets that had gemstones set in their sides. Their glow sprayed the room with light. Cozy shelves lined the walls, each laden with books and ornaments. Many were in small glass cases. Trophies of some sort? Of the half-dozen or so people in the room, one drew her attention most. Straight-backed with jet-black hair, he wore white clothing and stood in front of the room's crackling hearth. He reminded her of someone, a man from her childhood, the messenger with the smiling eyes, the enigma who knew so much. Two blind men waited at the end of an era, contemplating beauty. The man turned around, revealing light violet eyes and a face scarred by old wounds, including a cut that ran down his cheek and deformed his upper lip. Though he looked refined, holding a goblet of wine in his left hand and dressed in the finest of suits, his face and hands told another story of battles
of killing and of strife. This was not the messenger from Shallan's past. The man raised his right hand, in which he held some kind of long reed. He placed this to his lips. He held it like a weapon, pointed right at Shallan. She froze in place, unable to move, staring down that weapon across the room. Finally, she glanced over her shoulder. A target hung on the wall in the form of a tapestry with various creatures on it. Shallan yelped and jumped to the side just before the man blew on his weapon, shooting a small dart through the air. It passed within inches of her before embedding itself in one of the figures on the wall hanging. Shallan raised her safe hand to her breast and took a deep breath. Steady, she thought at herself. Steady.
Tin, the man said, lowering the blowgun, is unwell.
The quiet way he spoke made Shallan shiver. She could not place his accent. Yes, Shallan said, finding her voice. The man set his goblet on the mantel beside him, then slipped another dart from his shirt pocket. He tucked this carefully into the end of the blowgun.
She does not seem the type to let something so trivial keep her from an important meeting.
He looked up at Shallan, blowgun loaded. Those violet eyes seemed like glass, his scarred face expressionless. The room seemed to hold its breath. He'd seen through her lie. Shallan felt a cold sweat.
You are right, Shallan said. Tin is well. However, the plan did not go as she promised. Yasna Kolin is dead, but the implementation of the assassination was sloppy. Tin felt it prudent to work through an intermediary for now.
The man narrowed his eyes, then finally raised his reed and blew sharply. Shallan jumped, but the dart did not strike her, instead flying to hit the wall hanging.
She reveals herself as a coward, he said. You came here willingly, knowing that I might just kill you for her mistakes.
Every woman starts somewhere, Bright Lord, Shallan said, voice trembling rebelliously.
I can't claw my way upward without taking a few chances. If you don't kill me, then I have had a chance to meet people that Tin probably would never have introduced me to.
Bold, the man said.
He gestured with two fingers, and one of the people sitting beside the hearth, a spindly, light-eyed man with teeth so large he might have had some rat in his heritage somewhere, scrambled forward and plunked something down on the long table near Shallan. A sack of spheres. Inside it must be brooms. The sack, though dark brown, glowed brightly.
Tell me where she is and you may have that money, said the scarred man, loading another dart. You have ambition. I like that. I will not only pay you for her location, but will attempt to find you a position in my organization.
Pardon, Bright Lord, Shallan said. But you know I won't sell her out to you.
Surely he could see her fear, sweat dampening the lining of her hat, trickling down her temples. Indeed, Fearspren wiggled up through the ground beside her, though his view of them might be blocked by the table.
If I were willing to betray Tin for a price, then of what worth would I ever be to you? You'd know that I'd do the same to you if offered a big enough bounty.
Honor? The man asked, expression still blank, dart pinched between two fingers. From a thief.
Pardon again, Bright Lord, Shallan said, but I am no mere thief.
And if I were to torture you? I could get the information that way, I assure you.
I don't doubt that you could, Bright Lord, Shallan said. But do you really think Tin would send me with knowledge of her location? What would be the point of torturing me?
Well, the man said, looking down and tucking the dart into place. For one thing, it would be fun.
Breathe, Shallan told herself. Slowly, normally. It was hard to manage.
I don't think he'll do that, Bright Lord.
He raised the reed and blew with a swift motion. The dart thumped as it stuck into the wall.
And why not?
Because you don't seem the type to throw away something useful.
She nodded toward the relics in glass boxes.
You presume to be of use to me?
Shallan raised her head, meeting his gaze. Yes? He held her eyes. The hearth crackled.
Very well, he finally said, turning toward his fireplace and picking up his cup again.
He continued to hold the reed in one hand, but drank with the other, his back to her. Shallan felt like a puppet whose strings had been cut. She exhaled in relief, legs wobbling, and sat down on one of the chairs beside the dining table. Fingers trembling, she got out a handkerchief and wiped her brow and temples, pushing back the hat. When she stopped to put the handkerchief away, she realized that someone had taken the seat beside her. Shallan hadn't even seen him move, and his presence gave her a start. The short, tan-skinned person had some kind of carapace mask tied to his face, pulled tight. In fact, it looked like the skin had started to grow around the edges of the mask somehow. The arrangement of red-orange carapace pieces was like a mosaic, giving a hint of eyebrows, of anger and rage. Behind that mask, a pair of dark eyes regarded her, unblinking, and an impassive mouth and chin were also left exposed. The man, no, the woman, Shallan noticed the hint of breasts and shape of the torso. The exposed safe hand had thrown her. Shallan stifled a blush. The woman wore dark brown clothing, simple, tied at the waist with an intricate belt, studded with more carapace. Four other people wearing more traditional Alethi clothing chatted softly beside the fire. The tall man who had questioned her did not speak again. Bright Lord? Shallan said, looking toward him.
I am considering, the man said. I had been expecting to kill you and hunt down Tin. You can tell her she would have been fine coming to me. I'm not angry that she did not retrieve the information from Yasna. I hired the hunter I felt best for the task, and I understood the risks. Colin is dead, and Tin was to achieve that at all other costs. I may not have commended her on the job, but I was satisfied. Deciding not to come explain in person, however, that cowardice turns my stomach. She hides, like prey.
He took a sip of his wine.
You are not a coward. She sent someone she knew I would not kill. She always has been clever.
Great. What did that mean for Shallan? She hesitantly rose from her seat, wanting to be away from the strange little woman with the unblinking eyes. Instead, Shallan took the chance to inspect the room in greater detail. Where was the smoke from the fire going? Had they cut a flue all the way down here? The right wall had the greater number of trophies, including several enormous gem hearts. Those were together likely worth more than her father's estates. Fortunately, they weren't infused. Even uncut as they were, they'd probably glow enough to blind. There were also shells that Shallan vaguely recognized. That tusk was probably from a white spine. And that eye socket. That looked frighteningly close to the structure of a Santhid's skull. Other curiosities baffled her. A vial of pale sand, a couple of thick hairpins, a lock of golden hair, the branch of a tree with writing on it she couldn't read, a silver knife, an odd flower preserved in some kind of solution. There were no plaques to explain these mementos. That chunk of pale pink crystal looked like it might be some kind of gemstone, but why was it so delicate? Bits of it had flaked off in its case, as if simply setting it down had almost crushed it. She stepped hesitantly closer to the back of the room. Smoke from the fire rose, then curled and twisted around something hanging at the top of the hearth. A gemstone? No, a fabrial. It gathered the smoke as a spool gathered thread. She'd never seen anything like it.
"Do you know the man named Amaram?"
asked the scarred man in white. "No, Bright Lord."
"I'm called Mraes," the man said. "You may use that title for me. And you are?"
I'm called Vale, Shallan said, using a name she'd been toying with.
Very well. Amaram is a shard-bearer in the court of High Prince Sadeus. He is also my current prey.
Hearing it spoken like that sent a shiver through Shallan. And what do you wish of me, Marais? She tried but didn't get the pronunciation of the title quite right. It wasn't a Vorin term.
He owns a manor near Sadeus's palace, Marais said. Inside, Amaram hides secrets. I would know which ones. Tell your mistress to investigate and return to me with information next week on Chachel. She will know what I seek. If she does this, my disappointment with her will fade.
Sneaking into the manor of a shard-bearer? Storms! Shallan had no idea how she'd accomplish such a thing. She should leave this place, abandon her disguise, and count herself lucky for having escaped alive. Marais set down his empty cup of wine, and she saw that his right hand was scarred, the fingers crooked, as if they had been broken and badly reset. There, glistening and golden on Marais's middle finger, was a signet ring bearing the same symbol that Yasna had drawn. The symbol Shallan's steward had carried. The symbol that Capsule had tattooed on his body. There was no backing out. Shallan would do whatever she had to in order to find out what these people knew. About her family. About Yasna. And about the end of the world itself. The task will be done, Shallan said to Marais.
No question of payment? Marais asked, amused,
removing a dart from his pocket.
Your mistress always asked.
Brightlord, Shallan said. One does not haggle at the finest winehouses. Your payment will be accepted. For the first time since she'd entered, she saw Marais smile, though he didn't look toward her.
Do not harm Amaram, little knife, he warned. His life belongs to another. Do not alert anyone or bring suspicion. Tin is to investigate and return. Nothing more.
He turned around and blew a dart into the wall. Shallan glanced at the other four people by the fire and took memories of them with a quick blink each. Then, sensing she had been dismissed, she walked to the ladder. She felt Marais's eyes on her back as he raised his blowgun one last time. The trap door opened above. Shallan felt the gaze follow her as she climbed up the ladder. A dart passed just beneath her, between the rungs, and stabbed the wall. Breathing quickly, Shallan left the hidden chamber, entering the dusty upper basement again. The trapdoor closed, shutting her away into the darkness. Her poise broke, and she scrambled up the steps and out of the building. She stopped outside, breathing deeply. The street outside had grown more busy, not less, with those taverns drawing a crowd. Shallan hurried on her way. She realized now that she hadn't had much of a plan in coming to meet with the Ghost Bloods. What was she going to do? Get information from them somehow? That would require earning their trust. Marais didn't seem the type to trust anyone. How would she find out what he knew about Urethiru? How to call his people off her brothers? How would she...
Following,
Pattern said. Shallan pulled up short. What?
People follow, Pattern said,
voice pleasant, as if he had no idea how tense this entire experience had been for Shallan.
You asked me to watch, I watched.
Of course Marais would send someone to tail her. Her cold sweat returning, Shallan forced herself to move, not looking over her shoulder. How many? She asked Pattern, who had climbed up onto the side of her coat.
One, Pattern said. The person with the mask, though she now wears a black cloak. Should we go speak with her? You are friends now, right?
No, I wouldn't say that. Pattern said. She suspected he was trying to figure out the nature of human interactions. Good luck. What to do? Shallan doubted she could lose her tail. The woman would have practice with this sort of thing while Shallan... Well, she had a lot of practice reading books and sketching pictures. Light weaving, she thought. Can I do something with that? Her disguise was still working. The dark hair trailing down her shoulder proved that. Could she change to a different image overlaying herself? She drew in Stormlight, and that made her increase her pace. Up ahead, an alley turned between two groups of tenements. Ignoring memories of a similar alleyway in Carbranth, Shallan turned into this one with a quick step, then immediately breathed out Stormlight, trying to shape it. Perhaps into the image of a large man to cover over her coat and... And the Stormlight just puffed in front of her, doing nothing. She panicked, but forced herself to keep moving down the alleyway. It didn't work. Why didn't it work? She'd been able to make it work in her rooms. The only thing she could think that was different was her sketch. In her rooms, she'd drawn a detailed picture. She didn't have that now. She reached into her pocket, taking out the sheet of paper with the map sketched on it. The back was blank. She fished in the other pocket for the pencil she'd instinctively put there and tried to draw while walking. Impossible. Salas had almost set, and it was too dark. Besides, she couldn't do good detail while moving and with nothing firm to back the paper. If she stopped and sketched, would that arouse suspicion? Storms. She was so nervous she had trouble keeping the pencil straight. She needed a place where she could hide, crouch down, and do a solid sketch. Like one of those doorway nooks she'd passed in the alleyway. She started to draw a wall. That she could do while walking. She turned down a side street, the light from an open tavern spilling across her. She ignored the ruckus of laughter and shouts, though a few of those seemed to be directed at her, and drew a simple stone wall on her sheet. She had no idea if this would work, but she might as well try. She turned into another alleyway, almost stumbling over the snoring form of a drunk who was missing his shoes, then took off at a run. A short distance in, she ducked into a doorway recess a couple of feet deep. Breathing out her remaining Stormlight, she imagined the wall she'd drawn covering over the doorway. Everything went black. The alley had been dark anyway, but now she couldn't see anything. No phantom light of the moon, no glow from the torch-lit tavern at the end of the alley. Did that mean her image was working? She pushed back against the door behind her, pulling off her hat, trying to make sure none of her poked through the illusory wall. She heard a faint scrape outside, boots on stone, and a sound like clothing brushing against the wall across from her. Then nothing. Shallan remained there, frozen, straining her ears but hearing only the thud of her heart. Finally she whispered, "Pattern, are you here?" "Yes," he said. "Go and see if the woman is outside, somewhere near." He made no sound as he left and then returned. "She is gone." Shallan let out the breath she'd been holding. Then, bracing herself, she stepped through the wall. A glow like that of Stormlight filled her vision. Then she was out, standing in the alleyway. The illusion behind her swirled briefly like disturbed smoke, then quickly reformed. The imitation was actually pretty good. Examined closely, the joints between her stones didn't align perfectly with the real ones, but that was hard to see at night. Only a few moments later, though, the illusion shattered back to swirling Stormlight and evaporated. She had no light left to sustain it.
"Your disguise is gone," Pattern noted.
"Red hair." Shallan gasped, then immediately shoved her safe hand into her pocket. The dark-eyed con woman that Tin had trained could go about half-clothed, but not Shallan herself. It just wasn't right. It was also stupid, and she knew that, but she couldn't change her feelings. She hesitated briefly, then took off the coat. With that and the hat removed, and with her hair and face changed, she was a different person. She left out the opposite end of the alley from where she assumed the masked woman had gone. Shallan hesitated, getting her bearings. Where was the mansion? She tried retracing her route mentally, but had trouble fixing her position. She needed something she could see. She took out her wrinkled paper and drew a quick map of the path she'd taken so far.
I can lead you back to the mansion, Pattern said.
I can manage. Shallan held up the map and nodded.
It is a pattern. You can see this one?
Yes.
But not the pattern of letters with the span read?
How could she explain? Those were words, Shallan said. The war camp is a place. Something I can draw. The picture of the path back was clear to her.
Ah, Pattern said.
She returned to the mansion without incident, but she couldn't be certain she'd cleanly slipped the tail, nor whether someone from Sabariel's staff had seen her crossing the grounds and climbing into the window. That was the problem with sneaking about. If nothing seemed to have gone wrong, you rarely knew if it was because you were safe, or if someone had spotted you and just hadn't done anything. Yet. After pulling her shutters closed and snapping the drapes into place, Shallan threw herself back onto the plush bed, breathing deeply and trembling. That was, she thought, the most ridiculous thing I've ever done. And yet she found herself excited, flushed with the thrill of it. Storms! She'd enjoyed that. The tension, the sweat, the talking her way out of being killed, even the chase at the end. What was wrong with her? When she'd tried to steal from Jasnah, every part of the experience had made her sick. I'm not that girl anymore, Shallan thought, smiling and staring at the ceiling. I haven't been for weeks now. She would find a way to investigate this Bright Lord Amaram, and she would earn the trust of Marais so she could find out what he knew. I still need an alliance with the Colin family, she thought, and the path to that is Prince Adolin. She'd have to find a way to interact with him again as soon as possible, but somehow that didn't make her look desperate. The part involving him seemed likely to be the most pleasant of her tasks. Still smiling, she threw herself off the bed and went to see if any food remained on that tray she'd been left.